The best way to stay up to date with the SoCal Sound is by signing up for our email newsletter. Get the inside scoop on station events, ticket giveaways, and pre-sale opportunities. Go to thesocalsound.org and click sign up for the email newsletter at the top of the homepage.
Hey, it's Matt Pinfield here at KCSN, SoCal Sound, and I'm here with Grant Lee Phillips, and I'm so excited to see you because, man, we haven't seen each other since, we really haven't run into each other since 2011, okay. And I'll explain that in a minute, but just want to tell everybody, thank you for supporting public media and continue to support public media and public radio, which is what we are, and man, where else would I get to interview my friend, Grant, and you know, places like, you know, I mean, I don't know. There's just, this is where, if you love music, this is where you are. And this is, and for me, it's just amazing. So, Grant, it's so good to see you. Last time we were together, I was hosting Bob Mould's tribute night at the Walt Disney Music Hall.
Right.
And it was around the time that Bob, a little bit after he put out his book, See a Little Light, and the celebration was called See a Little Light. It's been available for fans for a long time, you know, to actually see that concert, but it was incredible. It was, our friends were there. It was like, you know, you and I and Margaret Cho and, you know, and Britt and Spoon and Dave Grohl and, you know, and No Age. So, and, you know, and John Worcester from Superchuck mm-hmm. also plays in Bob's band and, you know, those guys. But it was just an incredible night. And I loved that experience that we had there, all celebrating Bob's music with Husker Du, his solo stuff, and Sugar. It was great.
Right. Yeah. It was really special.
It was a fun time. And so lots happened in our lives since then. But the great news is, I mean, you got this new record coming out called In the Hour of Dust. And, we've already heard a few songs off this record, but I'm just very excited about the record because the songs that we have heard, we really love. And there's, you know, in what I think is one of the things that's always been a great characteristic of your music is how descriptive and, you know, how cinematic the lyrics have always been to me. For me, I've always felt that there was, you had an incredible way of painting a canvas lyrically, and you've been able to do that for a long time through your solo records, which, you know, and now, of course, you know, in the over a dozen, you know, and then, you know, the stuff that you did, because I was a huge fan of Grant Lee Buffalo, too. Right. Loved the band. So, you know, can we talk about this new record now?
Sure.
You've been living in Nashville for quite a few years now, right?
Quite, yeah. I mean, soon after I saw you, I mean, by the end of 2013, we had moved from L.A. to Nashville.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I've been out there since. Big shift, yeah. As you can imagine.
Yeah, and you got to Nashville before, like, the massive migration. There's been a lot more.
Yeah, I guess so. There. Yeah. I suppose when I moved there, I had that sort of association of all of the interesting 60s country music that came out of there, you know, or somewhere near there.
Yeah,
you know,
there's so much great stuff. I mean,
Glenn Campbell, or, you know, that kind of stuff, you know.
Yeah, which is so great. I mean, you know, like, you and I have talked about it before, like Wichita Lyman, Galveston, and all, by the time I get to Phoenix.
Right, right.
Oh, I mean, that's just the tip of the iceberg. There's so many great things, right? But he's so important.
Yeah, my parents, they played a lot of records around the house. My dad was, he was born in Arkansas. My mother was born in Okemah, Oklahoma. Yeah. And so there was that love of, you know, country music, among other things. You know, my mother loved the Carpenters as well. But, you know, but a lot of that swirling around. And as a young musician, it kind of finds its way. And it continues to swirl.
Yeah. That's great. And so you were being exposed to music as a kid.
Yeah.
There was always music playing in the house.
Yeah, I think so. You know, 1970s, driving around with my mother. That was a great time for depressing songs on the radio.
There really was.
The golden age of depressing songs.
Yeah, it was. Because, you know, there was a real singer-songwriter thing going on. Yeah. But it was also, even if it wasn't, it was just like that was the period where you know, it really broke through about like from 70. I mean, it was certainly starting at the end of the 60s, right? With Crosby, Stills, Nash, and people like, you know, obviously Neil Young's his solo stuff. It was all starting to kind of break through with James Taylor and everything else and Carole King. And it was really breaking through. And then just, but there were a lot of great songs and radio played a lot of those great pop songs, which are just, it was amazing that stuff like that was absolutely so popular.
Oh yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, there were other eras, as you know, to follow and concurrent movements as well, you know? I mean, that's the wild thing. You know, when you stop and think of what was going on in England at the same time that some of these songs we're talking about
yeah,
came
like,
out.
Yeah, because that's know? When all of a sudden we got T-Rex and Bowie and, yeah. you know what I mean, and Roxy and Slade.
Yeah,
and,
but I kind of love all that stuff.
It's all know? Great,
it
isn't
all
it?
Gets thrown in the blender in some way.
Yeah.
Brings out the nervousness in me, this talk of the future. All of it moving at light speed, too much to devour. Pray that we make it in one piece. But who are we fooling? A fire that keeps a nation warm, or its undoing. We are closer tonight, closer than ever. We are close tonight, the touch of a finger. And arrows that fly across the sea, eyeing the hour. A magic that we don't dare repeat, the trick of unraveling. In driverless cars on Market Street, around every corner. But what is to stop us before we turn on each other? We are closer tonight, closer than ever. We are closer tonight, the touch of a finger. We are closer tonight, closer than ever. Closer tonight, closer than ever. We are closer tonight, the touch of a finger. We are closer tonight, closer to heaven.
You how old were you when you started playing guitar and started finding an interest in songwriting?
Oh goodness! Well, I used to pick up Songwriter magazine, Hits magazine. This was maybe when I must have been about 11 or 12, maybe a little. You know, Elton John used to all you could find the lyrics to all of his songs inside the great gatefold sleeves. And I really took to those things. But guitar for me was about 13.
Yeah.
And about the minute I learned a couple of chords and I was beginning
to write. Did you play piano as well?
We didn't have a piano in our house. We had a, what they call a little chord organ.
Yeah.
You know, you can hit a button and it says A minor and another one says F minor. And I quickly realized that's how you make haunted house music if you hit the right
Exactly. Like that, I know. Yeah. But that's great. But yeah, I know what you're talking about with those Elton things, and having the lyrics is the one way that was so important to be able to follow. And the magazines that you're talking about, for people that are watching that are wondering, of course, yeah, they used to have these magazines that would have the lyrics to all the pop songs that were coming out, or maybe if it was country, depending on, but it had everything. I mean, it really did. R&B songs, pop songs, you know?
Oh, yeah, yeah. The OJs or, you know, I mean, you name it. Everything that was on the radio. And it's a good education for having a visual understanding of how a song works, you know, the building blocks.
Yeah.
I didn't realize it, and I probably wrote songs for a good, well into my 20s before I stopped and realized I think I might be a songwriter because I keep writing these songs. But I didn't really, you know, wasn't that conscious, really.
Yeah, who were your favorites? Because I know you talked about your...
Oh, goodness.
I mean, I'm sure you listened to everything, but was there certain people...
Well, you know, the artist that made the big dent, and you may recall this when we talked for a long time back in the day, Bowie was a huge one for me.
Yeah.
Kind of that conduit, you know, for... Through Bowie, one, you're going to discover this enormous catalog of songs, but you discover all these other artists, perhaps, you know, it might be Iggy Pop, or it
or
might
Martha
be
Hoop or
Brian
know,
Eno.
Yeah.
For me, Bertolt Brecht.
Yeah, right.
You know, Kurt Weill, because of the BBC production that he did of that one-act play. So many different artists that I came to know.
Yeah, Bowie was a big kind of for me, too, I mean, which I got to actually tell him.
He did.
You know what I mean? As we sat on couches across from each other at his place, it was I got to tell him that, you know, like I wouldn't be sitting here if it wasn't for you opening up my eyes to a whole other world.
Velvet Underground as well.
Yeah.
All right.
He was the first one who like really respected and cared about Velvets and Lou and incorporated it in the songwriting style.
Yeah. Isn't that wild? Like one artist that can be the gateway, the gateway drug to so many.
Yeah.
But that was a big one, you know. I mean, Queen, I was, you know, young kid trying to work out those guitar parts.
I mean,
I don't know that I ever did, but
for me, it was like, you know, that stuff was so great. For me, that was a thing that was beautiful. Is Queen, I saw at 13 years old do Night at the Opera at the Beacon Theater in New York City. It was one of the greatest shows I ever saw in my life. I mean, there's shows that I remember vividly, like, you know, the Clash show with... You know, Joe Strummer, Paul Simonon smashing his bass on the cover at the New York Palladium, which I was there for one of those shows, and it was the one where he smashed his bass, and I was in the orchestra.
Oh my goodness!
You know, back on Mick Jones' side of the stage, I was. But the beauty of that, you know, of all that whole period of music and the things that you're talking about, just amazing. And
well, it was like a bomb went off at that moment as well. You know, where, you know, who knows. You know what you would become when the dust settled.
Yeah.
You know, when you were exposed to the Clash or Elvis Costello or
that stuff.
The Cramps. I mean, you might go down a whole different road. You know.
It's true. It's amazing. And I like I said, that Queen show was just blew my mind as a kid. I'm like, what?
Oh yeah.
You have to see that at 13 and then wonder what you know everything after that is a little different, right?
Right. Coming to L.A. in '83 was the big kind of turning point for me. I guess you know, I was 19, I guess, and. My roommate, bandmate, Jeff Clark, and I, we were going to the Café de Grand, these kind of nice sort of underground punk clubs.
Yeah, what kind of stuff were you seeing then?
What an energy, what an energy that was happening right here, just bubbling up like the La Brea Tar Pits.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, there were already bands that were making a name for themselves, like X, for instance.
Yeah, they're so great. See the
Blasters
back
of course,
then,
you know. You know,
see Gun Club back then, and people like that are.
A whole bunch
of. Some of that old cowpunk scene, too, right? And all that
Yes, Tex and the Horseheads. And, you know, I mean, it was just a really exciting time to be here, you know. The clubs where I could manage to get in before when I wasn't. Quite old enough, you know. But
that's the great thing about you and I being around the same age or close to the same age. We got into clubs underage. It was perfect because you know you wanted to go see bands, so you know. But there was a drinking age, but you just kind of like you know they weren't as strict.
Right, the doorman might have been underage as well.
Yeah, exactly.
And some of the bands. I mean, you know, Del Fuego's. They couldn't have been that old when they played.
They were great
here in LA. Yeah.
Yeah, Don't Run Wild. Remember that? I love those songs.
I wanted to be a part of that, you know, and
yeah.
out of that, you know, the first bands that I was a part of, Yeshiva Burlesque and Grantley Buffalo kind of grew out of that.
Yeah. Did you get to play with a lot of those bands too that were coming out at that period of time, like Guadalcanal Diary or?
Yeah, I mean, you know, there was
a history with you, even in your ancestry, with Trail of Tears, which is a great Guadalcanal Diaries song.
Oh, goodness. Yeah, I'm an enrolled citizen of the Muscogee Creek Nation, that you're speaking of that. I can remember we did some shows, independent projects, Bruce Leicher. I don't know if you ever ran into Bruce and everything. Yeah. He ran a fantastic label, and this soon to celebrate something like 50 years or something like that in existence. But we did shows, you know, we did benefits. John Jardel was on one of those benefits, I recall. And man, I'd have to rack my brain. You know, we opened one of the first tours we did with Grantley Buffalo was opening for Bob Mould with Sugar. That was 93, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, and even before that, he had a hand in putting out our first single.
Yeah, because he put out the single that was on his singles only label, right?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, let's talk about that. So that was cool. How did that friendship start up?
I think it kind of developed through you know, we hadn't really met him before that tour, but he had taken a shine to that song, you know?
Yeah.
And it wound up getting played quite a bit on a number of stations back east. Most especially, you know, WFNX in Boston.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Great radio station.
Yeah.
But it's amazing. So we look at all, I mean, it's been quite an incredible trajectory of time. And, you know, and you were signed to Slash, which was a great label out here.
Oh, yeah. That's right. Yeah.
It was you guys.
Dream Syndicate.
Yeah, Dream Syndicate. Man,
Los Lobos.
You know, tell me when it's over. Like, all that stuff was so good.
Yeah, and our peers, you know.
And Roses. And then, like you said, there was X, and there was, you know, things like the Gun Club, and, you know, I mean, there's always something going on in that period of time, right?
There was a lot going on, yeah.
And you felt at home with, like, a place like when Slash signed you guys originally, right?
Well, yeah, most certainly, you know, and it felt like we had the freedom to explore.
Yeah.
And yet, somehow or another, this record was going to come out.
Through Warner.
And the light of day. And, yes. And then, ultimately, yeah, distributed through Warner Brothers and other, you know, other labels overseas,
yes.
However the plumbing works and everything, you know, with that stuff. But that meant a whole lot. It was a very different time, I think.
I think it was great that there was that time where, you know, there was that much interest in new and up and coming bands.
Yeah, really important. I felt like kind of a really renaissance of some sort.
Yeah, what was that experience like when you started to see that things were starting at that period of time with Grantley Buffalo? You know, there was a lot of interest in. All of a sudden, radio was starting to pick up on things like Mockingbirds. And
Yeah. I mean, it was fluky because, you know, it's that Mockingbirds is a very different kind of song. I don't think there was a lot of songs like that. None.
That was the beauty of it, though. That was the thing.
But it didn't seem so far-fetched that maybe it could slot in. And I think, kind of as a writer, you're always kind of, you've got this notion that you know, there's a big wall, but there must be one little brick that you can
find a way through
mine,
that.
You know?
Yeah, exactly. It's great.
Just a sliver. And it was pretty cool when that happened, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, Beavis and Butthead took a liking to it.
Yeah.
Whatever that is worth. I got a kick out of that. And and I still play the song.
Yeah. Oh, the song is phenomenal. You know, it's great.
Ask me what is wrong, and I say nothing. Float out the window like a kite that's gone and broke the string. And when I snag myself up on the power lines, she always finds a way to talk me down. Yeah. She knows me too well, foolish to try pulling the loop over her eyes. people ask me what it is that's keeping me awake. A list of worries that I can't keep hid, that I just can't shake. Sometimes I'm full of doubt, my feet unsure. When all the noise that maybe comes too loud to keep from her. She knows me too well, foolish to try. Pull in the too well, foolish to try.
Don't sweat costly vehicle repairs this summer. Instead, donate that unused car, truck, RV, or boat that's been taking up space in your garage or driveway to the SoCal Sound today and help keep the best radio content and the SoCal Sound sessions on the air for years to come. It takes just a couple minutes to get started. We take care of the paperwork and the pickup is free and your gift is tax deductible. Go to thesocalsound.org, click support, or call 877-527-6123.
Tell me you're making In the Hour of Dust. And is the title reflective of just the way that things are? I mean, there's a lot of different things, imagery you can get from somebody
yeah.
like that.
I guess
the American Dust Bowl to just the way that things have been like with the world and the condition of everything these days. Tell me a bit about that.
Well, it's interesting you make that connection. That was definitely a confluence of disasters, plural.
Yes.
You know, the Dust Bowl period, you know.
Of course, yeah.
You know, the Great Depression and then this environmental catastrophe.
Which was insane, right?
Yeah. I have always been fascinated with that particular period, you know. And figures like Woody Guthrie, who also chronicled that period of time.
Yes.
But, you know, in the case of this album here, the songs themselves, like a fair amount of my songs, I'm trying to kind of give voice to a certain feeling, and it might be a feeling of anxiety, uncertainty, trying to wrap my arms around that and asking, what is this moment? What is this thing, you know? Feeling my way around this beast of a moment.
Yeah.
I became interested in painting a great deal over the last number of years. I'd made a trip to Norton Simon when I still lived here. Norton Simon's a great museum in Pasadena.
Yeah.
There was a painting called In the Hour of Cow Dust, or just Hour of Cow Dust, I believe.
Yeah.
And it references a moment in the day in India where the cows are let home. And in doing so, it stirs up the dust, and it's a signal. It's that call to bring out the lanterns, prepare yourself for night is about to fall.
Yeah.
And I thought, wow, that's really kind of a very visceral kind of thing. You know,
yeah.
I think that's got some meat on the bone. I just wrote it down. I mean, this was years ago.
Yeah.
And I kind of revisited that when I began looking at these songs, and going yeah. through various. You know, going through the lyrics, going through the artwork that I had created myself. I had an image that I'd painted that was sort of a somewhat dusty scene in its own way.
Now, Little Men, tell me about that song.
Little Men. Yeah, that's one of the first singles off the album. It's tackling that terrible tradition of of strong men that we've seen throughout the ages, you know? Little men with grandiose ambitions that have, you know, that wind up taking a very brutal path, you know? But at the heart of it, really, I'm of the belief that, you know, studying history, those type of people, they don't hold on to power forever, you know? It's so, you know, I advise anyone to read history, you know, most especially those who want to surmount it and bury it.
Yeah. Yeah, because history is very important.
It is.
In every aspect of it, from music to, you know, I mean, it's a real, so I found that song to be, I thought it was a great way to kick things off for this record, you know what I mean, in that period of time.
Yeah, it has an energy to it. It seemed some songs, they claim the position. I'm going to be first in line. And
yeah, now she knows me. Tell me about that, too.
Like, she knows me as a real personal one. That's one of the first ones I wrote. I was out on the road just plunking along, and, you know, it's really a song about my connection to my wife of so many years.
You've been together for a long time, right?
Like, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And, you know, that person in my life, maybe you have that person in your life where you feel like they know you better than you know yourself sometimes.
Yeah.
When you've forgotten, what do I think about this? Where am I?
Yeah.
They can help you get back to that point.
Yeah.
You know, kind of reel me down from the
yeah.
the branch that I've got myself out on.
Exactly. And also remind you of the good qualities that you have and everything.
Yeah. Yeah. I value that. Yeah. You know, and that's the thing. I mean, it's easy to get lost in the miasma of anxiety and all of this these days, but we have to hang on to those things that they mean something to us, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, that's what we fight for. That's what we live for.
Yeah, and some of the other, you know, there's some really interesting imagery in the record too. I love when you talk about, like, you know, self-driving cars and, you know, people turning on each other. That descriptive thing is, you know, it's interesting because, you know, as a person who's seen how progress technology has changed things so quickly.
Yeah.
You know, you always want make sure people hold on to humanity as well.
Yes.
It's one of the things that's super important.
That's
so
right.
Tell me about that song.
Well, goodness, you know, I wrote the song. I had made a trip up to up north. I was playing a show in Northern California and driving through San Francisco, and this was the first time I'd seen quote unquote driverless cars.
Yeah. You're talking about Market Street there in Lyric.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
It's freaky when you first see it. I mean, I don't know. Some people may love that thing. I'm not necessarily sure I want to get in the back of one. You know what I mean? To be honest with you.
Yeah, that might be. I might just be a control freak, but I like to do the driving.
Yeah.
Driverless cars on Market Street, around every corner.
Yeah, I love that
line.
Stop
us before we turn on each other.
That's the lyric that I love that
Yeah. line. Oh, thank you. You know, I mean, maybe
it stood out to me immediately.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's the fear of this slipping out of our hands. Where is this going?
Yeah.
You know, are we losing hold of humanity?
Yeah.
You know, as technology continues to accelerate.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. I have a rental car that I took out here and I can't figure out how to turn anything on.
Yeah.
It's too advanced for me.
Yeah. Some of it, I'm like, is it confusing on purpose?
I think it is.
We don't want you to figure out any of this stuff. And by the way, you now cannot change the oil on your own car, no matter what you want to do.
Right. You can't crack open your iPhone. I mean, I never really did, but some people do. Some people like to do that.
Yeah.
In a breath you are in so deep that you can't keep silent. Tens of thousands clash like we never have. We're learning the word defiance. Defiance. Nothing lesser than emancipation. Baby, there's no sweeter song than little men who wanna rule like Caesar can't hold the title long. Like a switch that's thrown a sudden jolt all over the world, it's quaking. We slip the last shackle. The world isn't theirs for taking. Nothing lesser than emancipation. Baby, there's no sweeter song. And little men who wanna rule like Caesar can't hold the title for long. Days are numbered, any person will go with it back on the wall. Knock 'em down and she'll come back again, waving her flag in the face of it all. Than emancipation. Baby, there's no sweeter song. And little men who wanna rule like Caesar can't hold the tide up for long. And nothing lesser than emancipation. Baby, there's no sweeter song. Baby, there's no sweeter song. Baby, there's no sweeter song. Ta da, ta da, ta da, ta da, ta da, ta da, ta da.
About the other song that you played, I love that one. You making it through the night. Tell me a bit.
You are speaking of Did You Make It Through the Night?
Yeah,
okay.
I love that. How many times have you had to say that to somebody in your life for you because you're worried about them going?
Well, you know what? I latched on to that phrase during the pandemic. I took a course, a language course that was offered by the Muscogee Creek Nation language course or something like that.
Yeah.
And it was really great. You know, you get up in the morning and log in and you would learn phrases and some basic speech. There's no word for good morning in the language of the Muscogee Creek. But there is a phrase and it's like Estongan Jug Hayadega is how you say it. And something to that effect. And it means, did you make it through the night okay? And I think that's perfect. That's just perfect, you know?
It's a great song title.
Yeah, and it feels appropriate for the times.
Yeah.
You know? That doesn't necessarily have to be, ominous.
Yeah.
Either one. It doesn't have to be something that you would fear. I stood out on the porch back home in Tennessee a couple of summers ago and I saw the Northern Lights.
You're
not supposed to see
sight.
The Northern Lights in that part of the country, but it was astounding. So maybe kind of like preparing myself, being open to the, the fantastic unknown.
Yeah. That's great. Now, so tell me about when you're on the road now, Grant, are you performing by yourself? Or
Yeah. I mean, I've been doing it that way for...
It's been a while.
Ever
right?
now, yeah. You know. I make records with my friends and we go in the studio, but even when I do, I'm often kind of carrying that little seed of voice and guitar, and we're building around that, you know? So that's still, you can kind of make that out in the recording, you know?
Yeah. And what's great is, you know, we've talked about every kind of, whether it's be on camera here or on the air or off camera, everything from Gordon Lightfoot to Elvis Costello. I mean, who are some of the artists that, I know Elvis you're a huge fan of, but who are some of the other people that have really been important to you throughout time? Like, I mean, do you look at Elvis's career since 77 and you think about it?
Yeah, I mean, there were those, you know, that made a big dent on me early on. Neil Young was certainly Dylan.
Yeah.
Goodness. The Beatles, of course, Lennon, and their albums of George Harrison, most certainly.
Yeah.
You know, in terms of my real kind of early beginnings as a musician, soaking up that kind of stuff. You know, but I will also admit that, like, you know, when I came to L.A. in 83, I'm listening to Nick Cave and I'm listening to The Cure and I'm listening to a lot of English stuff, actually, Buzzcocks. And,
yeah, one of my favorite bands of all time. Oh, yeah,
those are fantastic
songs. Pete Shelley, you know, and like Steve Diggle, those guys together, it was, you know, those songs, you know, Singles Gone Steady, eight of the greatest singles on one album, put together as, you know, the A and the B side, but I love those records.
Yeah, they're an amazing record, R.E.M.,
you
know, Joy Division,
I was into all that stuff.
Smiths,
as well.
Of course, you know, Soothing the Banshees,
you
know.
I loved all of that.
Yeah, so it's kind of somehow.
And we still play a lot.
Yeah.
Because it's held up. What's amazing is how much of it is really held up. It's just
I go back and listen to it and I think this I covered some of my favorite songs from the 80s on an album called 1980s.
Right. That one
and
was
it's
cool.
Like campfire versions.
And you did everything on it. Tell me about
it. I did everything I could remember.
Yeah.
I didn't want to Google it or study it too hard. I just kind of I don't know if that was ill advised.
No, you love Echo, you love bands like
that. Oh yeah, right. Echo and Robin Hitchcock.
Yeah, of course you
did. But you know, I Robin is an artist of 2025 as well. He doesn't stop making albums.
Yeah.
You know, and nor has John Doe or a lot of my people who I consider dear friends.
Yeah.
At this point, you know. I
mean, there were people like. Do you see John in Nashville sometimes? Or?
We play together every now and then. John and I, Kristen Hirsch and I.
Yeah,
we go out now and then together and do like kind of a trio thing called Exile Follies, and we trade off songs. You know, Kristen does 20, I do 20. We do, and then we'd get together, and it's and we've been doing this off and on since about 2000.
Wow.
I guess, yeah.
That's great.
You know, I mean, there are big gaps in between.
Do you guys do your own songs or do you do covers or both?
We do
each other's
songs? A little bit of both. We do, yeah, we join each other on each other's songs, you know, and then we'll do a cover, you know. You know, I mean, John knows a lot of cover songs as well. You know, I mean, we've done Sing Me Back Home, some of the ones that he's covered over the years.
Yeah.
You know, Memphis Minis. Version of When the Levee Breaks.
Yeah, it was so great, yeah.
You know.
I mean, he did Breathless, all those things.
Yeah. You know. So that's, I love that kind of thing, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm sure you knew Kristen through the years of throwing muses and stuff that she did.
I met Kristen, she had just kind of, she was just beginning to make, she might have had just made Hips and Makers a year or so before, and I was crazy for that record. It was a great record.
Yeah.
You know? So, yeah, I think she was kind of stepping aside from Muses at that moment when I'm around 2000.
Yeah,
but they never really disbanded, you know. As I understand, they would just kind of come back to it when it was right.
Just when they were in the mood.
Yeah. There are artists here in L.A. You know, who I count as Amy Mann. You know, there are peers of mine. If I listen to them, I will go. It'll probably come out somewhere. I have to be careful.
Yeah.
You know, Elliot Smith was. You know, I mean, he was. Really special artist
who we got them. Did you,
to, you know, got to know a bit at Largo, you know, and that was sort of our musical clubhouse there. A lot of us, my friend John Bryan, still a dear friend,
and John, you know, done so much great production as well as you know all this. So, what do we think about it? Yeah, Elliot, way too young.
Oh yeah, but you know, of course he hasn't gone away.
No,
his music is you know, there's new. People every day that discover his music.
Yeah, last week was the anniversary of XO, which was
such
a great album.
Yeah.
Bottle Up and Explode and Baby Britain and all those things.
There were a couple different artists around that particular time when that album came out and, you know, some of the Gillian Welch albums came out as well. You know, Revelator, that just kind of just made my head spin.
Yeah.
You know, and did so with such an economy, you know?
I just thought, amazing that she was able to do that.
Yeah, right.
He was so talented.
So I'm always you know, game for the next thing that's going to make my head spin like that.
That's great. Well, I want to say, you know, thank you so much for this new record, which is great, you know?
Yeah, thank you. It's exciting.
Yeah, it's great. It's great to have you back with new music again. You know, I mean, it's always good when you come up with new stuff, right? So
yeah.
I want to thank you for coming by and hanging out today. Just so good to have you here.
Yeah, thank you, Matt. You know, pleasure.
Thanks for doing it so much. All right, so it's KCSN, SoCal Sound. I'm Matt Pinfield here with Grant Lee Phillips. We enjoyed it, and we've got some incredible music for you people to check out right now. Let's check out some of Grant's music live from the brand new album, The Hour of Dust.
Freezing rain, freezing wind, will the frozen ground thaw out again? Keep a candle close, you never know when you may need it. Anyone who's looking out the window sees a place they can't predict. Strange days have begun. I wouldn't be stunned if the moon leapt out of the heavens or the sea swallow the sun. Strangest of days, did you make it through the night okay? Choosing not to sing of doom, I try hard to push that thoughts away. I like a cheerful tune, one that I might whistle by the grave. In all my years, I've never heard so many sidewalk prophets on the airwaves. Strange days have begun. I wouldn't be stunned if the moon leapt out of the heavens or the sea swallow the sun. Strangest of days, did you make it through the night okay? Yes, done gone, jug higher to God. Oh, my love, did you make it through the night okay? When the northern light shone the glory down for all to see. Watch the colors of the sky and turn from pink to cream. Think you've seen it all, well, you ain't seen anything. Strange days have begun. I wouldn't be stunned if it all broke out of the bedlam or the sea swallow the sun. Strangest of days, did you make it through the night okay? Yes, done gone, jug higher to God. Oh, my love, did you make it through the night okay? Oh, my love, did you make it through the night okay? Oh, my love, oh, my love.
The SoCal Sound sessions are produced by 88.5 FM, The SoCal Sound. Session hosted by Matt Pinfield. Recorded and mixed by Tristan Dolce. Edited by Matt Blake. The SoCal Sound is a public service of California State University Northridge and Saddleback College. Broadcasting over the air at 88.5 FM and streaming on the web and through our app at thesocalsound.org.